People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
The community development movement really began in 1968, and ironically, that was the year that both Eden Housing and NeighborWorks were formed. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing, where today's featured guest is the CEO of NeighborWorks, Eileen Fitzgerald. NeighborWorks America is a national leader in affordable housing and community development, with a great track record of creating opportunities for low-income people to live in affordable homes in safe, sustainable neighborhoods. Eileen has been the CEO of NeighborWorks since June of 2011, prior to which she served as the organization's chief operating officer. Welcome, Eileen.
Thank you.
So what was happening in 1968 to give rise to create so much momentum for community development?
Well, you know, that was a time of huge change in our country, right? And it follows on the Housing Act of 1964, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which, among other things, removed racial deed restrictions on housing and tried to obviously begin broader desegregation of residential neighborhoods. But redlining continued after that Civil Rights Act, which meant that, you know, both lenders and real estate agencies continued to steer racial and ethnic minorities to certain areas. The Housing and Urban Development Act of 65 created HUD, so that expanded urban renewal, which, as you know, any of you know, has a contentious history in how it impacted communities. Extended code enforcement. There was the Demonstration Cities Act in 1966, which started model cities. Things like the Ford Foundation in the late 60s, starting to look at kind of the community development movement. I think in response to all the social change that was going on, NeighborWorks actually, as a national entity, wasn't created until the 70s, but we're based on the Neighborhood Housing Services of Pittsburgh that started up as a public-private nonprofit model and really said, okay, as opposed to just maybe the alternative of taking to the streets, how about we partner and see how we can do something to improve our community? And it was really in response to redlining and disinvestment in the community. So I think there was, a belief by 1968 that people could have some say in their communities and didn't just have to sit back and take it for granted.
Well, and that notion of a public-private partnership really has been the foundation for so much of what has gone on since. NeighborWorks is headquartered in D.C., but you work on the ground in communities throughout the country, right, through a series of affiliates, almost like franchises. Can you talk about how the network was formed, how many affiliates you have, how you select them, that sort of thing?
Sure. Well, today we have 236 network organizations in all 50 states and District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. Initially, when NeighborWorks America, which was its legal name is Neighborhood Reinvestment Corporation, was formed, we used to actually help organizations form. So that was in the 70s and 80s, as other community development corporations were also being formed around the country. So we would help bring together the residents, the public sector, private sector, and really see the development of organizations. As the community development movement as a whole and the industry as a whole matured, we stopped helping develop groups and then moved to affiliating strong organizations. And today, you know, we have a network of excellence. We have rigorous standards for our 236 organizations. We work really hard to make sure they're a network of excellence. We actually do internal ratings of our organizations, and if they, you know, if they can't meet the standards, we work hard with them to improve, turn things around, but we do disaffiliate those organizations. Annually, we have an application process that results in usually 5 to 10 organizations joining the network over time. And that is available on our website between January and March on nw.org. And typically we have about 100 or so organizations apply each year.
So what is NeighborWorks America's relationship to the federal government?
So we are a congressionally chartered nonprofit. So that means we were actually established by Congress. We have a statutory board. So it says in the law who has to be on our board. And that's basically the regulators, Federal Reserve, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, FDIC, the National Credit Union Administration, and then HUD as well. And so they govern us as a board. And then we actually get a direct appropriation from Congress. So we don't go through any other federal agency. And about 90% of our funds, of our core funding, comes from Congress. Last year we received $132.7 million for our core funding. And then we, several years ago, were asked to administer a special grant program for foreclosure counseling. And we have done that. We're now finishing our fifth round of that. And that funding has ranged between $50 million and $180 million in each round. And in that, we serve HUD counseling intermediaries and HSAs across the country, and about 1,400 to 1,700 sub-grantees who are all doing foreclosure counseling.
Right. So given the geographic diversity of your members, the network's really been at the forefront of trying to find solutions to the foreclosure crisis. Can you talk about what you're seeing nationally with foreclosures? Are there areas that are harder hit than others?
Sure. And, you know, there are definitely areas where the concentration is much stronger. And obviously, you know, as Eden, sponsor of this, is based in California, you know, unfortunately, California is kind of in the eye of that storm. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But I would say, you know, there are few places that are totally untouched, you know, few states that are totally untouched by the foreclosure challenge. And sometimes smaller communities and more rural areas, you know, there's less capacity and less expertise maybe to deal with it and less focus in by the servicers. So those communities can also face some real challenging times. Also with the unemployment numbers, you know, that has just hit, you know, pretty broadly across the country. So that's making it tougher than when we were, you know, coming out of a kind of a subprime and mortgage lending place. In California, 153,000 properties with foreclosure filings was in the third quarter, and that was the highest total of any state. And obviously, California's population is much higher than any state. So, and it accounted for one in every four properties with foreclosure filings nationwide. So we certainly see that in the mortgage industry, lots of focus on, you know, on California as far as reaching out to counselors and doing events and what are the solutions there. California also had 15 of the top 25 metro foreclosure rates, led by Vallejo, Fairfield at number two, and then Stockton, Modesto, Riverside, San Bernardino. After California, Florida really is probably the next most challenged place, with one in every nine properties with foreclosure filings nationwide. So of the foreclosure filings nationally, one in nine were in Florida. And they also have a challenge with having a lot of investor or second home properties, which have different kinds of solutions. Another place, obviously, is Nevada, lots of properties that are underwater there. We also saw some big increases in Georgia. There was a 21% quarterly increase in overall foreclosure activity, with a large increase in REOs. Atlanta had a lot of mortgage fraud early on, and we have also had a lot of mortgage scam activity happening there. So there's also a very, very depressed market there. But, you know, all the big states, Illinois, Michigan, Arizona, Texas, I mean, every place in the country virtually, with a few exceptions of some really strong employment markets, are being hit. So the, that unemployment, is still unfortunately expected to increase, and then we hope start leveling out and decreasing, and we know that will, jobs are a key indicator of the solution to this crisis. We'd love to see a broader refinancing opportunities for families as well, so that, they can maybe not end up in a foreclosure place.
But you don't think we've hit rock bottom yet?
Yeah, that's a really hard question. The numbers around the country in delinquencies certainly have leveled out. In some quarters recently, they've gone down a little bit. It does not seem like the situation's getting worse and worse. The challenge is that there's just a lot of foreclosure in the pipeline. So we feel like there may be some improvement in the amount of people starting to go delinquent. And again, that's largely a jobs piece. But unfortunately, the pipeline for foreclosure is really large. So, ideally, the more of those folks we can help without them having to go through the foreclosure process, the better.
Right. So, and the solutions to the foreclosure problem really have two sides. One is finding a way to keep people in their homes. And the other is finding ways to acquire, renovate, and then resell the foreclosed homes. So first, can you talk about what you and your members are doing to help people stay in their homes?
Sure. Well, NeighborWorks has been a leader in homeownership education and counseling for 30 years. And for us, the best defense against foreclosure always is a well-educated consumer and somebody who up front, before they ever get into homeownership, has gone through that and really understands how to the responsibilities of homeownership and budgeting. When things like health crises and unemployment, even the best education and counseling can't obviously prevent those. So working with a counselor we think has significant advantages. We have a report that's been done, an independent report by the Urban Institute, that shows that families do better in getting to a foreclosure solution if they've worked with a counselor. They save a similarly situated family who's gone through NFMC, our foreclosure counseling program, saves about $267 a month compared on their loan modification compared to a family that did not go through that counseling. And we think that's because the counselors really work to get a sustainable solution. So we really focus on what works for that family, not just what do the DTI, the debt-to-income numbers, show. So I think that's the that's the first step. The foreclosure counselors work. These are people who just, deserve rewards every day. They're out on the front lines and dealing with families in crisis. The other thing that, NeighborWorks America does is actually train literally thousands of foreclosure counselors over the last few years so that they have the skills and necessary to do their job well.
The Obama administration formulated several programs in response to the crisis. Can you describe those and talk about their impact?
Well, sure. I'll touch on a few of them. Probably the biggest is making home affordable and HAMP. And that got off to a little bit slower start, but now more than 816,000 homeowners have received a permanent modification. And there's also been refinancing programs, and I know that the administration continues to look at those to see if they can make them more successful. And then continued support for things like foreclosure counseling and HUD counseling programs, which are key. The other would be the Neighborhood Stabilization Program. We haven't really talked about what happens, post-foreclosure, but obviously increase in REOs, real estate-owned properties in communities can really be devastating, as well as an increase in vacant homes and abandoned homes. So the NSP three cycles were really important in providing resources to both municipalities and nonprofits about how to address that foreclosure problem on the ground and deal with, vacant and abandoned buildings, too.
So what are your members, Eileen, doing to manage that onslaught of foreclosed properties?
They are working with partners. The first key is trying to for them or someone in their community to get some control of the properties, particularly properties that are critical. So NeighborWorks is one of the founding members of the National Community Stabilization Trust. That's an entity with other intermediaries that helps really transfer properties between the servicers in an efficient way and nonprofits or municipalities. So first challenge is how do you get control of the property? Obviously, there's financing issues related to that, and if you don't have access to NSP funding for that, getting the financing to do that. The second is many of our groups are very involved in rehabilitation, and how do you help get those properties up to a place where, you know, they're going to be assets in the community? We know that homeownership demand is down in some places, so the ability to manage those as scattered site rental properties is really key, and we have several organizations that do a very good job of that. I guess the other piece is trying to ensure that there are homeowners who are qualified to purchase those properties. And one of the challenges has been sometimes that the homeowners get bid at, have a higher bid, but actually lose to all cash investors because the properties, the servicers tend to prefer to sell to all cash investors. So along with many others, we're working to try to make sure that the homeowners have access to those properties. I guess the final challenge there is just making sure that the credit is available for homeowners who have, you know, reasonable credit, because credit's gotten so tight. We really need to work on making sure that we still have those opportunities, particularly in those communities that we're trying to stabilize, where people really do want to invest. So our organizations are, you know, touch on all of those things. One of the other places that they've done a lot of work is on preventing mortgage rescue scams, where scammers are out there penetrating, you know, preying on elderly and families at risk of foreclosure and trying to essentially get their last dollar as saying they can solve their foreclosure problem, which they can't. And that's a place where really on the ground, you know, just boots on the ground has made a big difference in trying to prevent those scams and building awareness.
Always one to look for a silver lining. I think in this crisis, perhaps the one silver lining may be that the supply of foreclosed homes could make it possible for first-time buyers to jump into the market. Do your members have programs that make that possible?
Sure. And as I mentioned, you know, the challenge right now is that credit is so tight.
Of course.
But, you know, our groups both work from a counseling perspective, sometimes have down payment assistance available in certain times. And then, you know, when possible, are working with local lenders or at times our lenders themselves to try to get that credit available. But we would certainly like to see a return to just more rational credit standards, not too liberal, but just a little better than they are right now.
In an ideal world. So the administration recently issued a request for proposals or information on how they might manage the foreclosed stock held by the FHA, Fannie Mae, and Freddie Mac. Did NeighborWorks or any of your members respond? And if so, can you talk about those proposals?
I'm sure. You know, I think Secretary Donovan at HUD said there was 4,000 responses. So lots of folks responded, and we did as well. And one of the things that we highlighted was really making sure that there are opportunities for nonprofits to participate, especially in bulk sales, and thinking about how we make sure that folks who are very invested in making sure there are good affordable housing opportunities in the community are not cut out of the solution. So, and we also, you know, suggested that to the degree that those sales can provide a deeper discount, so that there is money left to be able to rehab the homes to some better standard, that would also be critical.
The administration was seeking solutions for the REO stock that include converting housing to affordable rental housing. Do you think this is a viable solution for some of the stock? Is it possible to create rent-to-own programs with some of this stock?
You know, I think it has to be a viable solution because there are going to be certain markets where there is just, it's not going to be possible to absorb that level of home ownership. So what's really important in that, one is, you know, local code enforcement, and making sure that, that local communities have the resources, and they've obviously been really stretched to do good code enforcement, because that's critical in scattered site rental. Another is flexibility in financing programs, to like the tax credits, which can be used, for scattered site rental, but making sure that, that aggregation is possible. We don't necessarily advocate a specific property being in a rent-to-own situation. What we think makes a lot of sense is that nonprofits who manage several rental properties that are single-family, and also do have good, robust counseling programs and other ways to help people move towards home ownership, that as those people succeed, those properties that are rental, you know, become available for home ownership. You know, there's probably mixed success on taking an individual and saying, this is your home. I think we think the most important thing really is, how do you help prepare people? How do you help them fix their credit? And help them assess whether they're ready for home ownership, and then having the stock available. I don't know that it has to be tied to a specific person, a specific house.
Eileen, as the new CEO of NeighborWorks, you really have the ability to help shape national housing policy. If you had a wish list for national policy, what would it include?
Well, you know, I think a lot of that's found in the Housing Act of 1949. But, you know, for a long time, we've said that housing is the building block for everything, and somebody's ability to live in a decent, affordable, safe house in a decent community that is vibrant and healthy is really critical. So, you know, my big wish is how do we give people that opportunity? We still aspire to that. We've been aspiring to it for a long time. I think it's really critical in national policy that we don't create a one-size-fits-all solution. Rural housing, for example, is incredibly critical and is often left out and really doesn't, you know, the challenges are unique in how you address those. For example, some of the worst housing conditions in the country are in rural housing and very old manufactured houses that are out there. I think the other key on national housing policy we don't think about is, you know, the tie-in between housing policy and credit, and we're seeing how that is impacting it. So I think making sure that we have, you know, reasonable, rational credit standards, not putting people in homes they can't afford, but also not creating, you know, thresholds that are so high, like with, you know, down payments of 20% or credit scores of 780, that that homeownership becomes absolutely unattainable. You know, having a range of housing opportunities. That's really what NeighborWorks is about. We think that rental fits for some folks, that you know, homeownership fits for some folks, that good quality elderly housing should be available. All of those. So we need a national housing policy that's balanced, and that recognizes the needs for all of those and allows for that local flexibility.
NeighborWorks provides a wealth of resources for practitioners and other people who are interested in housing and community development. Can we just direct people to your website?
Absolutely. It's nw.org. And we also do train about 14,000 folks a year. We have e-learning training, so you don't have to come in person. And we have about 16 courses on that, but we also run training institutes 4 times a year, including one in LA in February, the end of February, and also offer place-based trainings with local partners. So, you know, housing gets more and more complex every day, so we think it's really critical that folks have the skill sets they need to effectively utilize subsidies and programs, and at the end, you know, we're all in this to make sure that whether it's tenants or homeowners, the people living in communities are in the best housing they can in a way that supports their family and is affordable.
Eileen Fitzgerald, CEO for NeighborWorks America, thanks for the work you do every day, and also thanks for joining us today on the Affordable Housing Podcast.
Thank you so much.
I'm Joanne Green. For more information and to hear prior episodes, please visit us at edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.